to Freshly Forever, a podcast that gives you fascinating insights week after week. Here's your host, Vi Kumar.
Hey folks, welcome to another episode on Podcast Freshly Forever. Today, I have the pleasure of having here with us Nidhi Pandya. She's an Ayurvedic gut specialist, healer, and consultant. She has been transforming numerous lives all over the world with her online consulting and expertise. Welcome, Nidhi, to Podcast Freshly Forever. Such a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much, Vi. It's an honor to be here, so thank you.
Okay. And with your background in Ayurveda, can you tell listeners how it all started and how you got oriented and initiated into it, please?
So I was actually born in a family where my grandfather was an Ayurvedic healer. So, and I lived in a huge joint family. So everything, I thought that's how everybody in the world lives, actually. I was naive enough to think that way. But I basically grew up with it as a part of my daily life. Always, given that we were a family of 14 people, there was always awareness that each person responds differently to heat, to the weather, to different foods, to even different emotional stimulus, right? Like, for example, I say that if, you know, something went off, if two of us were scolded for something, each person responds differently. So the awareness that what you are within, what your body and your mind are within, is really how you interact with the world. And a lot of the Western focus is that, oh, it depends on what you consume, but it depends on how you process what you consume. And that was a big part of our awareness growing up. I did not study Ayurveda till adulthood. Later, you know, eventually when I became an adult and I was studying more sociology, psychology, marketing till that point. But when I reached a point and I said, wow, like what's really missing in the world is this awareness of self, which comes through Ayurveda. And then I went and got years and years of formal education. And I always say that it never ends. So I'm still, it's such a vast and amazing science. So I'm still a student of Ayurveda. But really my journey started with being born into a family which had this deep awareness.
Excellent. And every day is a learning journey, right, for all of us. So, you know, it's a continuous process. And speaking about, you know, you said how each of us react to situations is all because of what we are composed of and, you know, what we are right now. So is that what Ayurveda often talks about as it relates to gunas and doshas? And can you tell listeners what the relevance of those are to one's prakriti and vikriti, which I guess, to put it in, you know, like very basic terms, is what you are born with and what you are post.
Right. And, you know, just again, if I put it into perspective, I'm going to start talking about what doshas are for people in a very simple manner. And then we'll talk about what prakriti is and what vikriti is in relationship with doshas. And for anybody who's listening, even if you've never heard about doshas or Ayurveda, let's just present you with this idea. So as a human body, as a human being, there are three functions that you're essentially doing throughout your life. The three functions are building, right? And you're always building cells, you're building nutrients, you know, you're building tissues out of the foods you eat. There's always a building process, which you can, of course, it's exaggerated in childhood because it's really a building phase. You're born maybe 18, 19 inches and by a year's time, you are like this toddler, right? So the building is exaggerated in childhood, but you have a building function. And there's another function, transformation, because we are building. And then we all need to transform. We need to transform the food that we eat. When we see something or we read something, we transform that into information and memories. You know, you're transforming nervous signals all the time. So transformation is a second function, you know, that we have as human beings, a very dominant function. The third is movement and decline, right? For all of this to happen, you know, for even your arm to move or for transportation of substances, to happen, there's a function of movement which is inherent in your body. And I say movement and decline because things need to be eliminated from your body, right? Even as we age, things need to kind of, you know, decline, decay, eliminate. And that is a third function, right? Now, in terms of doshas, these are the functions. The kapha dosha is the building function. Your body is building, building, building. That is supported by this term called kapha dosha. Transformation is supported by something called pitta dosha, which transforms everything. And the movement and decline is supported by vata dosha. However, what we can have is a tendency to have one of these functions more exaggerated than others. So in an ideal situation, you're building appropriately, you're transforming appropriately, and then your movement and decline is appropriate, right?
So in other words, all of us have all three components. It's just what we are kind of more dominant or made. Rather, you know, we tend to show more dominance.
Exactly, right. So the way I say, right, is that of course, given the age, right, children will always build more. Teenagers, in your youth, you're always transforming more. All the knowledge, you know, becomes productive work. You're procreating, you're having children. You know, teenagers or even young, the more younger you are, you'll quickly metabolize and transform your food. So that's dominated by transformation. And your old age is dominated by movement and decline. You dry up and your body shrivels up. But what happens is that all of us, right, could have an exaggerated tendency for one of these functions lifelong. For example, if your body likes to build more, or if you're kapha dominant, then you basically are, you know, let's say the easiest way to see this, you have more excess tissue than anybody else. You're even slower, right? Because when you're building, things slow down. So you're slower, you may be more grounded in your speech. Everything is more, you know, you have bigger eyes, bigger hair, bigger, everything is more, building. If you like to transform more, you may have a very active mind, but you may be very sharp and focused. Your digestion may be hot. You may react stronger to the sun, because anytime you have the opportunity to transform, your body likes to over-transform. It loves transformation. And Vata is dominated by like more of a movement. You know, there are children who like to move a lot. Their attention is not in one place. They're always fidgeting and they're going from one thing to the other. That could be a tendency. We could have it throughout our lives, the dry moving tendency. So if depending on what your exaggerated tendency is. Now I'll go to Prakriti and Vikriti. We're all depending on the nature of the sperm and the egg at conception. You are usually born, right? Unless you're in perfect balance and harmony and all three are equal. Most of us are born with a dominance. Some people are those children who just build and sleep, you know, those cuddly big children, or kids who break out into hot rashes and they are like transforming. They have loose stools and hot rashes and they cannot take the sun. And they're like the pitta children. And there could be kids who are just uneasy and moving and fidgeting and not sleeping well because Vata likes to move and not rest. They could be the Vata children. Right? So that's Prakriti. However, as you go,
would that be the, say, all the colic and everything that happens, you know, would you categorize that as Vata?
For the most part, right? Like the distended stomach, filling, the air filling in places, that unease. You see, in childhood, it's very distinct in babies. You can see these three very distinctly. And then as we grow, right, depending on what we consume, where we live, what experiences we have, how we interact with the world, that can change your original constitution a little bit, like kind of, or create an imbalance, would you would say. And that is called Vikriti. Right? So your Vikriti is the imbalance that has happened beyond and beneath. You could be born with a kapha dominance, but you could adopt regimens which keep you healthy. Right? Or with a pitta or with a vata. But as we kind of really create imbalance, that imbalance is called Vikriti.
Okay.
And it could be the same. You could have kapha prakriti and you could have kapha vikriti, which means you've really exaggerated it even beyond what you were born with.
How then do you evaluate an individual? Do you read their pulse? You know, as often I have heard or, you know, even experienced some going to an Ayurvedic practitioner, or are there other means for you to be able to tell what somebody was born with and what probably is more exaggerated at this time?
And, you know, that's where gunas come in. But basically, traditionally, pulse was not always used, right? Because what pulse does, it is great, but it's giving the power of knowing your body to another person. There are three tools. The three tools of diagnosis are prashna. So it's prashan, darshan, and sparshan. Right? So prashan is questioning, really, you know, with the introspection of your patient or client, and you questioning. It's you self-question, and then your doctor questions you. So you really get into the causes of why this happened. Then there's darshan, which means you kind of observe your patient and say, oh, how they're moving, how they're sitting, what their features are like. That's darshan, and which means to observe. And then there is sparshan, right? Which means, of course, you know, checking your pulse, but also palpating in other areas, you know, checking the distension of the stomach, for example, the knee. So there's all of these are tools, and you may not have to use all of them. In my personal practice, I use the prashan and darshan much. Mm-hmm. And then I rely upon gunas. The word gunas means qualities or properties. So to understand what properties is this person exhibiting? Are they exhibiting heat? Are they exhibiting lightness, heaviness, dryness, coolness, sharpness? And you look at the symptom and you evaluate the symptom for properties. For example, Vaidehi, I'm going to ask you, right? For just the reason why I'm doing this is because for somebody who's never heard this before, I want to just bring out how intuitive this science is, right? When somebody has a sunburn, Vaidehi, what are some of the properties of that sunburn? Look at just the name and tell me, is it hot? Is it cold? Is it dry? Is it moist?
It's dry, I would say. And
hot or cold?
Certainly hot.
Right? So you already know. So the property is hot and dry. So you know that I need something cool and moist to balance it.
Mm-hmm.
So then you say aloe vera, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or in a hot and dry place, we'll be drinking coconut water.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to get familiar with these gunas in your symptoms, in your body, in your day. The more familiar you are with symptoms, like I will always notice symptoms when I work with clients, right? To know, hey, this is more building, it's more grounding, it's heavier, this is probably kapha. This is more hot, it's more transformative, this is probably pitta, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really encourage people to do their self-work rather than taking a quiz or doing pulse, which you can do pulse. The quiz has very little value. But to really tune into their own bodies, because this is the science that empowers you. It shouldn't be the science that makes you, you know, dependent.
Okay. So you are able to clearly tell what someone was born with as well and what they are right now based on how they are interacting or whatever they are expressing and experiencing based on all your questions and, you know, like whatever you try to find by way of your interaction with them.
And I tell you, no. So the answer is it 100% accurate? No. And it's never for anybody, whether somebody's seen your pulse or not. Because anything is your reality in this moment of time,
mm-hmm.
in time, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's constantly changing your body. Like, for example, right, whether he in the world, it could be raining today. And I'd be like, oh, the earth, somebody who just comes onto earth say, hey, I visited the earth and it rains on the earth. But no, it could be a sunny day tomorrow. And then day after, it could be something else. But yes, there are regions which have more rainfall than normal. So you see, the general tendency is that it's, you know, it's a place which has more rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a general tendency, that general prakriti that you kind of examine. And it's a very general understanding, and it should be a general. Even in the places where there's a lot of rainfall, there could be a drought one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You see the prakriti and the vikriti of the earth and different regions on the earth. I personally, I am working with this concept called the inner climate, right? It's my own method of working inspired by Ayurveda. When instead of confusing people with doshas, I'm just going to get them, you get familiar with what is my climate in my body.
Exactly.
Is it like a desert, hot or dry? Is it like monsoon? Is it hot? Is it humid? And you get a comfort understanding of your own climate so you can balance it. Like we know, if it's snowing, I'll take a jacket. If I'm going to a hot place, I'll wear sunscreen or I'll take an umbrella, for example, right? So getting familiar with your inner world, just the way we are with the outer world, is something that I highly encourage. And it doesn't have to be super specific. You can have a general understanding and you're fine.
Okay. And you brought up a wonderful analogy right there with the sunburn and with the aloe vera. So does that mean Ayurveda scientifically, so you give the opposite, so you don't treat like with like, but instead you try to let, you know, you treat something with like the opposite effect, unlike say like an allergist who would probably, you know, try to give you like an allergy shot, you know, to prevent or kind of introduce the same element, but to prevent the adverse effect of whatever is bothering you.
I love that you brought up that example, Vai. I mean, I just really love that, because that is the number one principle of Ayurveda, is the Samanya Vishesha Siddhant. Number one, which means you treat, if there is a situation and you give it more similar, something similar, you will aggravate the situation.
Mm-hmm.
To diffuse a situation, you use the opposite. Right. And then to increase what you, if you want to increase what you already have, then you want to add like. So the like supports like and the opposite kind of diffuses light. Right? So it's called the Samanya Vishesha Siddhanta. And you're absolutely right. Honestly, I have to be honest, it's never something that I thought about, that here in the West, you want to prevent vaccine, you want to prevent COVID, they give you a little bit of the COVID. You know, that's just, they function very counterintuitively. And they say, let's get your immune system to be prepared for this if it comes up. Mm-hmm. Completely the opposite of Ayurveda.
So okay. Okay. And I really want to delve deep into doing certain basics right. And that's the very purpose of this discussion with you, Nidhi, you being the expert. But before that, if you can quickly touch upon the role of emotions, say fear, anger, overthinking, and those kind of stuff, how it plays into someone feeling good or not feeling so good.
So the first sutra of the Ashtanga Hridayam, which is one of my favorite ancient texts, is Raga Adi Rogan. All the diseases which begin at emotional imbalance. Raga is lust, Adis, etc. So anything that goes wrong in your body, any disease begins with an emotion. Mm-hmm. Because even if you eat extra, you're basically greedy. Mm-hmm. So it's a big part of it, right? Now, there are two aspects of it, and I want to touch upon both briefly. One aspect is every emotion will support one of these functions, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to just help you. I'm going to get your help now. Again, getting into the gunas, the properties, the qualitative aspects of things. Now, you talk about, you said overthinking, right? Mm-hmm. Or anxiety. Does that have movement? Of course, it's an intuitive concept. Is it a movement, right, in your nervous system? Or is it like a sluggish denial depression in your movement system, in your nervous system?
I would say movement, because I think it's dynamic depending on the situation. You know, certain things can make me think a lot. Certain times, certain junctures, I would just be content with, okay, I can just be easy and move on.
Absolutely, right? So it supports movement. The guna of overthinking is movement, because in your brain, you had a thought. Now the thought is ruminating, it's staying, and it's mm-hmm. picking up pace. It picks up pace, for example. It's just the more you think, the faster it moves in your brain, and then you can't take it anymore.
Right? Kind of like now, fight or flight mode.
Yeah, right. I know, and sometimes there's freeze mode where you just go shut down. But so you tell me, so in that, right, when we talked about the three functions, we talked about kapha, which is more building, grounding, slower. We talked about pitta, which is more transformative and hot. And there's the third, vata, which is movement and decline. So if this is movement and vata is movement, right, this emotion will aggravate vata, which okay. means you will be drier. And mm-hmm. then, of course, there's a whole science into everything that goes with that, which means you will stay up more, you'll be more anxious, you'll feel more depleted, you'll be more tired, etc. So every emotion, I'm going to ask you another emotion just very quickly. Anger, is it hot? Is it, is it hot or cold, for example?
Hot.
Hot, right? And pitta is hot. So people who are angry usually can feel very hot. They can get acidity. They can get... So every emotion can support a corresponding reaction in your body. Today in the West, so that's the one aspect of it, right? In fact, in the first few sutras of the Ashtanga Hridayam, would say, what will increase vata? Mm-hmm. It says chintya. Chintya is a word besides movement, dryness. It says chintya will increase vata, which means when you're thinking too much, it will increase vata, right? Depression, sluggishness will increase kapha, because it's an immobile, it holds mm-hmm. it in the same place. Emotions have a very, very big role, not only in the way they respond, interact with your body, but in terms of the choices you make in the world. So from within to outside, emotions will determine how you interact with the world. Now, that's the second aspect, Vai, is that every emotion mm-hmm. has a corresponding chemical reaction in the body. Right? Very simple. I'm thinking about, let's say, the loss of a loved one, which has not even happened. It could be so powerful that I could release tears. That's a mm-hmm. chemical reaction, right? Mm-hmm. So one thought, which may not even be real, has a chemical reaction. With that, every single thought 24/7 alters your body's chemistry. In the long term, the chemistry will alter the biology of the body. And again, you have your health is affected because your biology. I mean, we are being fed by this transportation, nutrient transportation system, your blood, your plasma. that goes all around the body and every thought changes your blood chemistry, then it's a no-brainer that how important emotions are, emotions that are in equilibrium to what your body is, the nutrients of your body. Very, mm-hmm. very effective. Mm-hmm. So that being said, emotions, big role in the choices you make in the climate and the environment of your body. And I'm so glad more and more we're talking about this today.
Okay. And I'm going to please ask every listener to kind of absorb what you just said. And then because I am going to come back to it in a little bit, but I just want to, as we talk more about doing basics right, but I want to start with the role of hydration. You just said the air element, vata, dryness, so much, right? Movement. What about hydration? How important is it? Several people think, oh, morning I get up, I gulp down a liter of water, or like, you know, okay, 4 cups of water. What is the role of doing things correctly so as not to disturb the equilibrium or the internal climate that you're talking about?
Vai, I have to say that you're very intuitive about this science. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. You can take it in a very deep manner. I love it. And, you know, this is one of the things that I see, right? What is the journey? We start off in youth like grape and we end up as raisins.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, old age, we are like raisins, all wrinkled. And the difference between the grape and the raisin is the loss of water content, the dryness that sets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then the preservation of youth and the preservation of longevity is preservation of those fluid elements. But the fluid elements are not just hydration and water.
Mm-hmm.
That is the important part.
Mm-hmm.
The fluid elements has everything that's soft and fluid. Most importantly, good fat, right? So water is very complicated because water can change which membrane it is in, given osmotic pressure,
mm-hmm.
right? And you have to think about it, like even if you've ever worked in a farm, right? It's the farmer is very careful about how much he waters, how he waters, whether even if you have a plant at home, you cannot just dunk a bucket of water.
Oh, yeah, now, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a certain time it'll absorb water better. There's a certain speed it will absorb water. You can't put it in one part. So similarly, we have, I think, overhydration is a problem, right? Because, you know, overhydration is 100% a problem because there are membranes in your body, you know, it's like, let's say the concentric circles. And this, the exchange of fluids is such a big part of it, how it goes through every membrane.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of distort that function when we just guzzle crazy amounts of water, even though it goes through our GI, gastrointestinal tract, and in Ayurveda, you know, fluids are separated and all of that happens, but still, it's very important. That being said, I say you drink in Ayurveda, you drink to thirst.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking excessively affects, it's like a monsoon in your gut. It's going to make it slimy, give rise to parasites, kill your Agni, things won't grow properly. Your Agni is your digestive fire. So you don't overhydrate. I say you drink warm water, sip by sip, to thirst throughout the day. More in the first half, less in the second half of the day. And then your body already knows that happens when it's sip by sip, it's lateral, it's slower absorption, you're not guzzling, everything goes right. The temperature of your body being warm blooded is kept intact. That being said, you make sure that you're not depriving your body of fats at all,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? So of course, you always support in Indian food, there's always a concept of a vaghar, which means you temper your spices mm-hmm. in a good fat. That's brilliant because the spices, which are their hot nature, will help in the breakdown of the fat. So your fat is being broken down nicely. You're not doing crazy amounts. You're doing in moderation throughout the day. You're oiling your body, but not depriving yourself, right? Some people are like, oh, this is an amazing chickpea salad. It has no fat. It has nothing. Just plain
chickpea.
I'm like, that is the problem. If you put the fat and you put the spices, I will take it, right? So for example, I think that's the one basic principle. Keep fats and keep spices in all your foods. Of course, depending on how much you can take and digest, it doesn't have to be great amounts. But that's your key to preservation of life.
Okay. And so we really can't emphasize more that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to anything for that matter. And so hydration, okay, get it, as I understand you, get it from the nourishment from the food that you eat. Say like cucumber provides hydration, right? So, and then all your fats. So the essential fats, that's why they are called essential, I guess.
And, yes, absolutely. And moist foods, like you're absolutely right, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the sweet potato would provide more moisture than, let's say, a cauliflower, right? Or drier foods that provide less. So just being mindful of that, to have moist, fluid foods, which have like that structure within as well, provides.
Okay. So on that note, then, several people think starting their day with like, water with lemon and water with lemon and honey and so much more, right? Some say, okay, ginger, this and that. Again, is there a one-size-fits-all approach there? And what is your recommendation for anyone to start their day right and so give themselves like maybe like an alkaline start? I guess alkalinity is the key to maintaining good health, correct?
So I would say, and I'll tell you, what the concept of that inner climate is, you know, because I'll tell you why even people who are in the medical field, right? What is alkaline? It's just a concept in our minds. It's not intuitive. It's not something we can understand, touch, feel. I say rough, you can understand. I say smooth, you can understand. Alkaline. Oh, it's good. It's heard of it. So I stay away from those words because my main work is to make the science more intuitive. But mm-hmm. yes, that being said, you're right. Assessing what is your internal climate and how do we bring it back? So let's go with the drinking water in the morning, right? A slight stimulation with some hot water and a substance in your body is not always a bad thing, right? You're kind of waking up your digestive system. You don't need to, but you can. Drinking tons of water, anything more than half a cup or one cup, depending on the size of the cup, I would say is detrimental to your health because your Agni is now like becoming slimy early in the morning. There's already dew in your garden and you're going to put more dew in your garden. You're going to put, you know, you think when you're walking on the grass in the morning, it's moist. Your body is also moist. You have eye boogers, nose congestion. You want to just keep it away from that.
Okay.
Adding substances to it. Yes, for some people, dried ginger could help for some people. Honey does not, you go with hot substances. So honey is always out of the game. But using a little bit of lemon sometimes can help if you had a lot of greasy food at night. You know, just how you use lemon to clean your plates. Mm-hmm. You can add a little bit of lemon if you've had, let's say, a big greasy meal at night. So depending on what you're experiencing, yes, you can add a substance and have a little bit of water and stimulate your digestive system, period. So it's not one size fits all, but it can be done. And in terms of, I forget your second question. There was something else that we talked about right now.
I guess, yeah, how you give yourselves a good start in the morning. So what is it that you do? And then when we said alkalinity, you said, yeah.
Alkalinity. Yeah. Okay. So the alkalinity, right? So that's what I say, the inner climate. The inner climate of a human being is, you know, you say, oh, pH 7. Oh, I mean, like right there, right? What is it? It means... And you say, so it's easier to understand alkaline when you understand acid because we are familiar with acid, you know, and that's why, oh, the opposite of acidic is alkaline, right? But I'll just give you a very simple understanding, right? Your body is warm-blooded. And this is my concept of the inner climate, that we are warm-blooded. We thrive best in warm environments, not hot, mm-hmm. not hot, not cold, not humid, not dry.
So kind of lukewarm?
Lukewarm and moist.
Okay.
Right? So even if you look at Ayurveda and you look at the properties of Pitta, Kapha, Vata, you see whenever you talk about balancing them, you're actually bringing everything back to warm and moist. Your breath is warm and moist. Your blood is warm and moist. The mother's milk is warm and moist. Mm-hmm. Your reproductive fluids are warm and moist. All our comfort foods are warm and moist. The probiotic environment is good bacteria. Where does good bacteria exist? Where does good flora and fauna exist in the world? Where it's warm and moist. It's too mm-hmm. humid, you will have parasites and mosquitoes. It's too dry and hot or cold, nothing will grow on it. Warm and moist is where we thrive. So you want to kind of always bring your climate back to warm and moist. You could be hot and dry. I could be cold and humid. Assessing what is my internal climate will determine my journey to warm and moist. Assessing your internal climate will determine your journey to warm and moist, right? But that is the assessment of the dosha, the assessment of the internal, the inner climate is understanding your ecosystem and bringing it back where it needs to be.
Okay, wonderful. And I guess, yeah, too much, you know, water when we talked about that. Probably, again, we all tend to say, oh, when it rains a lot or when there's like, you know, excess moisture, then mold breeds and, you know, there's like so much fungus and room for all of that. So I guess everything has a meaning, right? So doing it in abundance is not, you know, perhaps the right way. And maybe, you know, it can also cause that over dilution of fluids also tends to result in us losing other nutrients too, perhaps, correct?
Depending on how your body is doing transportation, right? There's never anything good in excessive fluids, right? It's dilution of nutrients. Sometimes they will not be transported as well. Everything can happen. In Ayurveda, there are diseases associated with ati ambupana, excess drinking of water. There is no place with, there's not much talk about dehydration, but there is a whole talk about ati ambupana, drinking excess fluids, excess water. So 100%, right? When we say we are made up of 80% water, it means 80% fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And we always protect the fluids. We always bring them in, but we be very gentle about their transportation. We don't dump and dunk our body. We forget what a complex machinery this is, and we have to be very intuitive and gentle about it.
Okay, perfect. What about standing and drinking water? And athletes, we see them doing it all the time. And is it true that standing can impact your joints? So you really have to sit and sip and not gulp your water down? Or is that just a myth that needs to be busted here?
No, so it's not a myth, right? You want to sit and consume. And I want to tell you that, so your agni is this hot environment, and your anus actually is like a vent, right? It dilutes. So the function of stools is to give a base to your agni. And when you sit in cross leg, or even sometimes, let's say if you cannot do cross leg, when you sit down, you're basically shutting off the vent. You shut off the vent and you say, I'm going to increase the heat here. It's one of the biggest openings in our body, right? That you use every day, right? I mean, you could do childbirth and your vaginal canal opens up once, but that's one opening which is very flexible, the anal opening, and opens every single day. So when you're sitting down, the musculature is such that you kind of close that
mm-hmm.
muscle. And when you close that muscle, there is increased, it's a very intuitive science, right? So then you're protecting your agni of your gut. And then when you're drinking water, the breaking down of that water is going to be very, very appropriate.
Okay.
So any consumption, so you can support your digestive fire, should happen in sitting position. Of course, there are always, you know, we'll always break some rules, but just being mindful of what rules we are breaking, right? Like an athlete is like, listen, my mission is to play this sport right now. I'm going to do this for now. But then I would recommend to the athlete that whenever possible, sit down and drink.
Okay, perfect. That's a great thing to, you know, take away here.
Back in a moment with our guest on Fresh Leaf Forever.
What about Agni, the digestive fire? We talked about emotions. So, and we talked about doshas, we talked about gunas, right? What is the role of Agni in someone being at their robust health? And what about the doshas, vata, pitta, kapha? And can Agni differ based on the body types or the categorization?
Absolutely. So Agni is extremely important, right? I mean, it's what Agni is, your digestive environment in the gut, which supports breakdown of your food, absorption of nutrients, transportation of nutrients, right? So really, digestion,
mm-hmm.
absorption, separating nutrients and waste, and then sending them off where they need to go. So you are only as strong as your Agni is. I have not met a single person who says mm-hmm. my Agni is fine and I'm not. And, you know, if there's any disease, it starts, I mean, in your physical realm, Agni becomes a part. Even if it's an emotional realm, eventually Agni will become a part of it. Now, if the job of Kapha is to build, right, is to break down at a slower pace because it wants to build, would you say the Agni then? And the reason why I'm asking you, right, because I want the listeners also to become intuitive about it, right?
So, oh, absolutely. I think I'm really enjoying this conversation. And I hope every listener, you know, this podcast has reached 6 continents and several cities worldwide. So I really am hoping that Yeah, this is just the way to go.
Yeah. So Vai, my question to you is that, so if the function of kapha, because we're seeing how Agni differs in doshas, if the function of kapha is to slow down the breakdown, you think the Agni will burn sharper if you want to slow cook something? Is the Agni going to burn sharper or duller?
Oh, it's going to be a very gradual process, I would think.
So kapha has lower Agni because mm-hmm. it builds more. So kapha, if you have a dominance kapha, prakriti or vikriti, and you're like, oh my God, I eat so much, I build so much, because your Agni is not breaking things down, right? Pitta, if pitta transforms quickly, will the Agni be sharper or duller?
It's probably going to be very rapid.
Very sharp, right? Just burns things up, right? Like lava. So generally people with pitta can have soft bowel movements, go 2-3 times because their body breaks down. Vata is volatile. It's wind. On a windy day, you're making a bonfire, doesn't work. But it can be because it's very volatile. Sometimes it's windy. Sometimes it's like, it's a volatile thing. It's moving all the time. So with vata, there could be volatile Agni, which means it can burn well one day, hungry one day. I'm hungry one day. I'm not hungry. One day I'm constipated. One day I'm not constipated. And that could be your typical vata digestive environment.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense. Then does it mean, okay, we all live in a fast-paced world, right? And people are eating and sleeping at like odd times. What is the best time of the day to consume the bulk of your food so you can absorb all the nutrients? And what are the do's and don'ts when it comes to not disturbing your Agni? Or how best can you build your Agni?
And anybody listening to this, the first thing I want you to know is that Ayurveda is the science of flow, of finding your flow. So don't let any of this information make you rigid and be like, oh my God, now I have to do this, right? Because by that token, the flow is going to be disturbed. You understand the beauty and the order of nature and you embrace it with love. That's the way to follow Ayurveda. I mean, only then can you be Ayurvedic. But if you're going to like, oh, I have to eat at five, you're not Ayurvedic, right? Mm-hmm. It has a flow mm-hmm. because you're working in flow and harmony. Now, that being mm-hmm. said, right, just the gentle understanding of how we are diurnal mammals. We wake up with the sun and we sleep with the sun. And the sun determines all our cycles and how we function. When to sleep, when to wake
okay.
up. So when the sun is at its peak, and the metabolic activity is the highest, your Agni corresponds with the sun. Your Agni is the highest when the sun is highest. So lunchtime around 12, 1 is when your digestive fire will do the best job of digesting your food. When do you go to bed? When the sun is down. When the sun is down, there's a slow down. And by 10, between 10 and 2 are the best hours to be asleep. So you want to ideally sleep mm-hmm. as close to 10 as possible, right? But all our cues, it's such an intuitive science. Whatever activity you want to do, let's see what's happening in the world outside and understand what might be happening in the world inside and then take that gesture. And if you did that, what you're doing is essentially swimming with the tide. Instead of saying, I'm mm-hmm. going to eat dinner, your body is swimming against the tide. At every given hour, there are certain juices. I'm going to call them juices. People can call them hormones, neurotransmitters. I'm going to just call them juices. There's certain juices mm-hmm. released at different parts of different times of the day. Those juices support certain activities. And while those juices are still living in your body, you want to conduct those activities. So they happen effortlessly and they happen with ease, whether it's sleeping at 10 because you have higher melatonin or whether it's eating lunch at lunchtime because you have more digestive enzymes.
Okay, what about warm versus cold foods? And what about cooked versus raw? And we all live in a day and time in a society where cold beverages are more preferred and they are consumed heavily with meals. So what is your suggestion? What is the best method to follow?
Yeah. And so Vai, these are all great questions, but I want to first start talking about, you said in this generation, right? So Vai, if you see that in our generation, everybody has a chronic problem, chronic joint pain, mm-hmm. chronic, you know, I have higher cholesterol at 30, a little bit high blood pressure at 35, or endometriosis or my PCOS. These are problems we've learned to live with for our whole life, right?
Autoimmune conditions. You know, how many? We have plethora of autoimmune conditions.
Exactly, right. And in the generations before us, people lived, they lived healthy. And then suddenly, you know, you could have, because we didn't have great critical care, you could die in an accident, you could die in a natural calamity, you could die, you could get your cancer and die, or have a heart attack and die, right? Mm-hmm. But people were not living mm-hmm. so much with chronic autoimmune, thyroid, digest, all these issues, right? So we've kind of created a lifestyle, a chronic lifestyle, which gives rise to chronic conditions. And these are chronic problems we have. For example, drinking a cold beverage. Now, when you lovingly understand that my body is a warm place, I'm warm-blooded. I feel the milk when I nurse my child and I see it's warm. I see the blood when I give blood. I feel my urine that it's warm and moist. It's understood from, you know, anybody, right, understands that transformation requires heat. I cook my food, I require heat. Then how can my gut be a cold place? What can cold water do to my gut? Of course, it's not, mm-hmm. you are not supporting the environment your body wants to preserve, right? As a result, we have, because of these chronic habits, we have chronic disorders. So completely mm-hmm. contraindicated. Does that mean you never have a cold beverage again? No. You know, find a summer day, find an afternoon, take a sip or two, you know, enjoy, experience it a little bit if you choose to. That's not your everyday thing. It's not what you do every day. It's not the habit you want, right? Similarly, cooked versus raw foods. When you go back into the history of the Homo sapien, the Homo erectus species, the minute the fire was discovered in the world, the evolution of our species kind of really expedited, because fire mm-hmm. allowed for our brains to become stronger and bigger because we were using more energy in our mind rather than our digestive systems. Raw foods mm-hmm. will make you use more of that energy to break down your food. Your body can only, your hypothalamus, which gives a pituitary, which gives instructions to what's happening at any given point. How do I use my resources mm-hmm. in the body? If all your resources are used to break down food, I say what you eat comes out in your stools looking the same. So that journey, right? If your journey from a raw broccoli to looking at to your stools is going to take so much energy, support your body, cook your foods a little bit. Some people say, oh, human beings are the only species that cook their food. We are the only species that do so much, so many things. We are the only people who drive cars. We are the only people who are on computers. We are the only people who interact and think and write books. We are different. We're an intelligent species. So let's use that intelligence for our body.
Perfect. What about microwaving, freezing, refrigeration, all these things that we do? And what, again, is the most ideal or preferable method when it comes to warming up our foods, cooking our foods?
So, yes, those are great questions, right? And now, understanding the limitations of modern life, the lack of support system, right? With all kindness to that, I understand that sometimes a single mother with children can't, mm-hmm. you need to do it, forgive yourself and do it, right? But if you're talking health perspective, I can't say it's healthy, right? There are times we have to forgive ourselves and do things, and that's fine, right? Because you want to be easy on, you cannot be so harsh on yourself. I strongly believe it. But what microwaving does, it's saying, hey, how do I produce heat without applying heat? Producing heat without mm-hmm. applying heat is saying, I'm going to go within the cellular structure of this food, stimulate the molecules, create so much friction within them that mm-hmm. it's going to now generate, the friction is going to generate heat.
So it's almost like an agitation internally that happens, right?
It is an internal agitation that happens. And, you know, I mean, the way your body has the memory, everything in the earth has a memory of everything else in the earth. Your body has a memory, right? You put potatoes, for example, in earth as compost, it will disintegrate. You put plastic, it won't, mm-hmm. because earth doesn't recognize plastic. Your body doesn't recognize something with the molecular structure of which has been altered to this degree. Your body doesn't know what that food is, right? It will try its best. And it will do a certain level of digestion, but it's not there's no prana in that fruit. Prana is that essential, subtle life code that things carry. It's a subtle life code that I'm life, I'm supporting life. And you're killing that prana. Same thing for refrigeration, right? If you refrigerate uncooked food, you can still do it. Let's say you have grains and flours and you want to refrigerate it. All right, you can do it mm-hmm. for the sake of convenience. Traditionally, things were kept in silos, but that's fine. But if you're going to cook your foods mm-hmm. and, you know, Agni Sanskar, you've already put fire on your food from the external world. Breakdown has begun at a rapid degree. And now you say, hey, I'm going to put you and freeze you. And that life stops. The prana which has just been evoked in you you know, now I'm going to say shut up to the prana. I say it's like going on a ventilator and coming back. That life, something, the prana, it's very hard to keep that intact.
So we are kind of playing around or disturbing the equilibrium, so to speak.
Yes, and that subtle code, which is carried, right? You're disturbing the subtle code. Of course, people have conveniences, but I say there are other ways that you can find that don't cook your food. Sometimes I say soak your grains, right? So we all eat beans, need soaking. I've had clients, right, where they're like, oh, I don't have time to soak. I'll just use canned beans. Mm-hmm. In that case, I say, when you bring your beans, soak them. Mm-hmm. Dry them and then freeze them. So the Agni Sanskar has not happened, but you have ready, you know, you have beans that you can just boil.
Mm-hmm.
You're still, so you, we all, as we evolve as a human species, we make some adjustments, right? I wish we all lived on farms and had farm to table, but we do it in the most respectful manner, the changes we make.
Okay, perfect. Then any recommendations on, say, for whomever is listening to this podcast, hey, I want to cook fresh. Okay, I'm now motivated to cook fresh. What are some simple takeaways in terms of, okay, just make this rice and dal and, you know, like, or steam some vegetables. What is Nidhi's go-to? I know Nidhi is a very busy person. So what does she do in her life is what the listener is going to wonder. So what is it that you do, Nidhi? And what are your recommendations?
Absolutely. So I think the tools in your kitchen are a big deal, right? So I have a slow crock pot. So it's like a slow cooker. I think in certain cases, you can even use a pressure cooker if you need to, right? So I have both. I have a pressure cooker and I have a slow cooker. Mm-hmm. When, I'm just going to give you guys simple things of what I do. At night, we always soak a porridge in the slow cooker. It's either cooking overnight or in the morning I turn it on because I wake up really early and it's cooked. It's soaked grains, whether it's oatmeal or it's bajra, depends on the season, whatever it is, right? It's soaked and that's breakfast 5 days a week, right? So I don't, there's no cooking time that goes into it.
Oats or millets or whatever that is. Okay.
Whatever that is, right? And there's no cooking time that goes into it, active cooking time. It's happening by itself. But that crock pot, right? Then I recommend that you have one of those salsa choppers, which chops everything very finely. So that's one of the big things. My lunch will always have a grain. Mostly it's sona masuri rice. Will always have a lentil. And sometimes they can be put together in your pressure cooker, you know, if you want to make a khichdi or you want to make, but the rice and the lentils is always a part of it. And then there's always veggies that are done in that salsa chopper. And then you kind of put it together either in a bowl form, either in a khichdi form, either in a pulao form, either in mujadara, whatever cuisine you want to eat can be done Ayurvedically. But the lunch is always a big meal. The grain, a lentil, veggies, greens, all of it made in the most seamless, easy way manner.
And what is your fat there? So because people say, oh, I cook with olive oil, I cook with avocado, I cook with sesame, or I cook with coconut. What is that fat? Okay.
For me, it's ghee, right? I'll tell you occasionally, yes. Occasionally, I'll use mustard oil in the winter, right? Occasionally, I'll use coconut oil, depends on what I'm cooking. Occasionally, sesame oil cannot be used every day. It causes skin conditions. But occasionally, I'll use sesame oil, depends on if I'm making something Asian. So it depends on that. And I don't have only Indian food. Because even though my go-to comfort food is dal chawal, like you said, it's then my comfort food. But we don't consume only Indian because I have two daughters and I think it's good. You can make anything Ayurvedic as long as you use a good fat and you have some spices. Now, it could be cinnamon. It could be clove. It could be hing. And you do multiple spices in you when you can. So that's my lunch. For dinner, then during lunch, then if I want to make a soup, which we do almost every day, let's say a lentil soup. Now my slow cooker is already free. It's free from the morning oatmeal or porridge. I'll just quickly throw in my good fat, do a vaghar quickly, throw in lentils, chopped things, put some water, and it's cooking by itself. Mm-hmm. It's 15 minutes of 10 minutes of preparation time, and it's cooking by itself. I also do a lot of roasted veggies at night, right? So if you learn to use your oven, you learn to use your slow cooker, you learn to use your crock pot, you learn quicker ways, you find efficiencies. It's not as hard as it seems.
So if there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, just try to keep things simple, but try to keep them fresh. And we talked about food and beverages. Why is it that honey is not to be mixed with anything hot?
Right. So, you know, the consistency of honey, if you notice, changes a lot when it's heated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It can be mixed. Otherwise, honey is very... So the molecular structure of honey changes. Now, mm-hmm. even in the West, researchers have said, hey, it releases a chemical, a compound, which cannot be digested by human beings. You know, they've, mm-hmm. they've done that research. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Ayurveda said, that it's visha. What is visha? Something that's visha is poison. The meaning of visha is poison. Mm-hmm. Poison is something, anything which a human body cannot use or recognize as its own, as some is poison. So it's indigestible. What happens to things that are indigestible? Your body is confused. Your immune system doesn't know what to do. It sticks. It becomes ama or toxic undigested waste. And that's what happens with honey. And it's just, so you want to keep it in its original state and form. It's very volatile. The minute you heat it, the molecular structure gets completely damaged. So you don't apply heat to honey. And you can use it. It's a great medicine. And it can be used in food products as long as you're not heating it. Or using it with a hot substance.
So people using honey with tea, what should be done then?
Avoid it. No honey. Use good. Use a little bit of jaggery. Use a little bit of rock sugar. Use fennel seeds or licorice for natural sweetness. Or, you know, even sugar is better. Cane sugar is better. Not a problem. Occasionally if you really need, but don't use hot honey in your
okay. tea. Okay. Great tip there. What about the most favorite aspect of anyone's day and life, snacking? So how best can one remain? I know several Ayurvedic practitioners are not big fans of snacking.
Yeah, and you know, let's just put logic to it, right? So I don't want to say, oh, because it's Ayurveda, you don't snack. It's just logic to it, right? That when your digestive system is kind of functioning or breaking down something and pushing it down in an order, this is the building phase when you're consuming food. Then there's a transformation phase when you're digesting the food. And there is a movement and decline phase when you eliminate. So everything in life has these three phases, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, everything.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So then you basically saying that, hey, I'm in the middle of my transformation phase and now you put something else in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And now my body has to put extra resources in the building. Or I was about to digest and now you put something, now I'm splitting my resources. So this constant splitting of resources, in fact, after 90 minutes of not consuming anything in the daytime, your body goes through the second cleansing, this deep cleaning process. Mm-hmm. Because your Agni gently comes up again and says, hey, is there anybody here? Let me clean out extra gunk. So that becomes, you know, snacking is like you've just washed all your dishes in the sink and you're like, I'm going to sit down. And then somebody else dumps another dish.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mm-hmm.
It's that feeling that your body has, right?
Okay.
So you just, you know, you gently sip water if you have an oral addiction. You do breath work if you have an oral addiction, but you avoid snacking tremendously.
Okay. Is fruit a good snack? And what about fruits for breakfast and eating of fruits in general? What are the to-dos there?
So I grew up with being the most ultimate fruit lover out there in the world, right? But I do know that fruit requires a lot of support to be digested because it's slimy. Regular mm-hmm. most fruit, right? Berries and oranges and sometimes even papayas are a little bit different. Pomegranate is the best fruit to consume. Papaya, pomegranate, grapes, great fruit. But generally, right, the structure of fruit is that it's slimy. Right. And it has a little bit of, and because of the sugar content also, it can ferment very quickly. And so you put fruit in your garbage can, the whole trash can stinks up after some time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So fruit is a little tricky. Every fruit has different properties, but they're all essentially very fluid. I say in the morning when it's already kapha kaal of the day,
mm-hmm,
right? It's
mm-hmm.
kapha kaal. At that point, kapha time of the day, when everything is already sluggish and slow, you don't have fruit as the first thing in the morning. And people have to do this for 3 weeks to experience the shift. Experience shift in energy, experience the shift in congestion, and just general, you know, movement through the day. It mm-hmm. has to be tried. You can have pomegranate in the morning, not a problem. But you have to try this principle. Instead, once your body is stimulated, you've exercised, you've eaten some warm breakfast. If you're hungry at 11 o'clock, have a fruit. Have one piece of seasonal fruit. Again, at 2, 3 o'clock, when you're feeling a little bit of a lull and you want something, you can have a piece of fruit at that point. Those are the 2 points to have fruits. But this concept of, oh my God, go crazy on fruit, it can't be, because anything that is jivaniya means supporting life, mm-hmm. has the qualities of life, which means they are in Ayurveda, they need to have some more bulk. They mm-hmm. need to be, you know, they need to have that good fat in them, that little substance. And fruits don't, not all fruits have that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about, okay, we talked about doing all the basics right. What about the role of sleep and the importance of sleep? We all live in a device control world and everyone wants to, you know, stay up late on those devices. So how best, or what is the importance of sleep in helping an individual rejuvenate and feel good? Because that seems like a much ignored aspect, and I want you to throw light on that aspect, please.
So the night is as important, if not more, than the day. Mm-hmm. All our life is about designing our day. I say, if you put half as much effort in designing your night, planning for your night, you won't have to do much in the day. Like, the day will be a breeze, because the three pillars in Ayurveda, the Traya Upasthamba, three pillars of well-being are ahar, food, nidra, sleep, brahmacharyas, how appropriately you use your senses. Nidra or sleep is huge from all aspects. Your body is going through free repair. Like your cells say, hey, you know, there's such a loving, oh my God, I feel so grateful to the body, because it's such a loving service your body offers and says, hey, you know, why go to sleep? It's time for you to rest. I'll do the work. Uh-huh. And, you know, all of these great juices come out to rest, repair, see what's needed, what's not needed, to throw gunk out, to process emotions. I mean, what a gift sleep is, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like a mother. Sleep is like a mother. Says, I'll just be there for you. You don't know anything. I'm here for you. And when we don't give sleep that due importance, right, what a big opportunity is taken. What a big disrespect it is to your body. So I'd say, if you know, sometimes you have to choose between sleep and exercise. Like this morning, right, I had to choose between sleep and exercise. And I love on a Monday morning to wake up, meditate, exercise. And I said, I'll have to give up either my exercise or my meditation. And I gave up my exercise, because uh-huh. I realized that my body needed that extra sleep. Uh-huh. So sleep is even more important than exercise, I would say. Not the kapha type of sleep, that lazy sleep where you know you've gotten enough, but uh-huh. you must build more and sleep more. But you know intuitively what sleep you need. Earlier, sleep earlier, wake up earlier is my recommendation. But not to be ignored, of course, there's a whole podcast we can do on good sleep.
Oh, yes.
Many, many aspects of it. But all I can say is, give it more importance than you give your day.
Okay. And real quick, I know you need to go. The role of exercise in an individual being, you know, again, feeling good, feeling healthy. And we talked about the mind-body connection and whatnot. And we have covered so much here, Nidhi. What is the role of exercise?
Exercise, again, vyayama. I mean, even before we had the word exercise, vyayama was a part of our science. And, you know, your body needs to move. I mean, yoga has its own, asana has its own merits, right? Mm-hmm. Normal vyayama, normal exercise also has its amazing merits, because you take your car for a drive if you've not driven it, right? Because everything needs to be moving. Everything needs to be stimulated. When you do vyayama or exercise, and especially asana, you're kind of stimulating certain glands in your body. You're moving your joints. You're stimulating your glands and ensuring health. We look after our muscle. Whatever we can see, we look after skin, hair. But they're glands and they're muscles, and the body is working so hard mm-hmm. always to keep them. Exercise helps to restore their health and to keep them in motion, to keep them working. So I say exercise is extremely important, but even in your mental health, right? Our nervous system, we just said, right, in the beginning of the podcast, that anxiety is this mobile overthinking. Mm-hmm. Our nervous system establishes, loves to go in a rut. It's like this. It'll catch on to this. Let's go this way. I'm working hard. I'll just keep working hard. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this. I'm just going to keep doing that. And your nervous system loves to, this clingy child just wants to cling on to something, right? Mm-hmm. When you're inspired, you're over-inspired, right? So exercise allows you to systematically break that obsession that your nervous system goes into. And it's a gift to your nervous system to be able to do that. So it's a no-brainer for every individual to exercise.
Okay, what a fascinating conversation, Nidhi. And in closure, if you can tell listeners the good stuff, contact info, your courses and things like that, so people can take advantage of your expertise even more, I think that would be great.
Thank you so much, Vai. So, you know, one of the things that I love to do is educate and empower people to follow Ayurveda intuitively. I have a lot of courses. If you follow me on Instagram, where I'm active almost every day, I'll put out new content. You can find all the links to my courses in my bio there. My Instagram handle is my_Ayurvedic_life. I also work with people one-on-one over 6-month transformation programs. But I always tell people, first start with consuming my feed on Instagram, then do a couple of my courses, do some of that self-work. And then I'm very happy. I work with a limited number of people, but I do that. But my heart is really in empowering and educating people to be able to live in an Ayurvedic fashion in a very immersive way. So, yeah, that's it. And thank you so much, Vai.
And your website, just so people can.
Yeah, it's nidhipandya.com. My courses are not all on that website, but they're on nidhipandya.podia.com to find my courses. But if you go to my link in my bio on Instagram, you'll find everything. You'll find the courses and you'll find you'll find my normal website as well. And I'm working on integrating it all in one place. So hopefully by the time the launch of this podcast, I might have that going.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for such an interesting and fascinating conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm sure listeners of this podcast are certainly going to take advantage of. And listeners, please leave a review from your podcast or app of choice and follow me at YP Kumar on Instagram for all things digital media and lifestyle. Until next time, this is Vi saying so long.